Hello, and thanks for joining Wicker Park Lutheran Church Sermons. Wicker Park Lutheran Church is a diverse ELCA Lutheran congregation in the Wicker Park neighborhood of Chicago. We gather at 10 a.m. to fully live into our incarnational faith as we experience God's presence in the gathered assembly, and we welcome you to join us. In just a moment, you'll first hear with a gospel reading from the associated sermon for the service that you're about to listen to. We hope that that gospel gives you some context before you jump right into the sermon. Thanks for checking us out, and we hope to see you soon.
The Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, O Lord.
So Jesus set out and went away to the region of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know that he was there. Yet, he could not escape notice. But a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately heard about him, and she came and bowed down at his feet. Now, this woman, she was a Gentile of Syrophoenician origin. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. Jesus said to her,
"Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and throw it to the dogs."
But she answered him,
"Sir, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs."
Then he said to her,
"For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter."
So she went home and she found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone. Well, then Jesus returned from the region of Tyre, and he went by way of Sidon towards the Sea of Galilee into the region of the Decapolis. They brought to him a deaf man who had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to lay his hands on him. So Jesus took him aside in a private away from the crowds, and he put his finger into his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. Then, looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him,
"Ephphatha,"
that is, "be opened." And immediately his ears were open, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Then Jesus ordered them to tell no one. But the more he ordered them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. They were astounded beyond measure, saying, "He has done everything well. He even makes the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." This is the gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Adults, children, dogs. The assumed hierarchy in today's gospel reading, if you caught it. Adults, then children, and then the dogs are at the bottom. At its best, it was Jesus' quick metaphor that he came up with to get that unnamed Syrophoenician to get out of his way so he can continue doing what he was doing. Adults, children, dogs. Probably at its worst, scholars say it's probably a racial slur. After all, using the term dogs to describe a Gentile was a commonplace derogatory term applied to those Gentile outsiders, for which that unnamed Syrophoenician woman was. And modern societies have developed similarly damaging racial and ethnic hierarchies throughout the ages. Can we think of any? Go ahead and shout them out. Can you think of racial or ethnic hierarchies that you can remember in modern times? I know you can. The caste system. So we can think of caste system in India, maybe. But there's been a lot of caste systems across the globe as well, right? We can think of them in places like Korea and Japan, even in places in the African continent, South African continent. Can we think of anything kind of like a caste system here, even closer to home? Yeah. What was that? men than women, right? So even if we just look at a gender binary, right? Men over women, there's kind of this hierarchy there, without a doubt. Maybe one more, and then I'll keep going and stop, get you off the hot seat. Slavery, right? So we can think of the enslavement of especially those from the African continent. And we can think about things like, the three-fifths clause, right? This damaging hierarchy that made those who were deemed white, whatever the definition was of that at the time, had more privileges, were higher up in this hierarchical chain than those who were deemed to be less, three-fifths of a person. And so even though most of these hierarchies technically have been removed from law, like we see in India, technically slavery is not supposed to be a thing here in the United States, still there remains so many barriers. The advantages of those who were formerly at the bottom, we can think of Dalits, we can think of those who have been enslaved in the United States, there's still barriers, right? Those benefits that those who are at the top of the hierarchy still seem to be out of reach. And the stigma that comes from it definitely still lives on. And we can think about other kind of hierarchies that are derived when culture or cultural labels something normative, right? It's those labels where whatever is considered default has become supreme, and then whatever is kind of different from that default is now seen as less than, right? So that's kind of the example that we got with men and women, right? We could even look at it with sexual orientation and gender identity, right? We can think about our heteronormativity. We can think about those who are straight. Their experience is preferred over those who are gay and lesbian and queer and intersex and transgender. And we can see those things, those heteronormative experiences and ideals, when we see things like bathrooms that are fit in that gender binary, right? Or maybe when a male-presenting individual is asked about his wife instead of maybe his partner or those who are loved by him. And these are the types of distinctions that were mentioned in today's reading from James. Now, in that reading, the author called to mind the ways that we are partial to those who have resources or riches or connections, those who are in the normative category. Oftentimes, we have a tendency, even if we are in some of those lower down hierarchical structures, we have a tendency to give greater respect and kindness to those who have those resources and connections and the normative status, instead of giving respect and kindness to those who are without. We can even see this when we have a tendency to treat those who are well-kempt or smell like they've maybe had a shower today. We treat those better than those who maybe look homeless or look unkempt or smell like they haven't had a shower today. We treat those people instead with a critical eye. Yet, what we find in James and also in Mark's gospel is that our God shows no partiality. Well, actually, in today's gospel, some scholars say that Jesus needed that reminder himself, right? After all, Jesus, we have to remember, he was in the territory where this Syrophoenician woman lived. And this territory was mainly a territory that was comprised of those who are Gentiles, that is, people who are outside of the Jewish realm. And so this unnamed woman, she comes up to Jesus, and she actually, some scholars argue, had to push Jesus, had to really tell him, hey, the circle is wider than you're trying to make it. For even the dogs, even though you call me a racial slur, even I have at least access to the bread that comes from the table of our God. And so in that moment, she pushed Jesus to widen the welcome, to include her and her daughter. Then after Jesus healed her daughter, He took this weird kind of circuitous route, one might say, to another Gentile region. Actually, so he's in Tyre, okay? So he's along the Mediterranean Sea. He goes further north, deeper into the Gentile region to Sidon, which kind of seems a little weird. Maybe he needed a little bit more exposure therapy to people who were different than him. But nevertheless, then he swings back around. He starts heading south again, past the Sea of Galilee, into another Gentile area called the Decapolis. There, in another Gentile area, he comes across another man. In fact, that man was brought to him. Now, this man had a speech impediment, right? He also was deaf. And, statistically speaking, if you're in the Decapolis, it is a Gentile, mainly Gentile region, it probably means this man was what? Statistically speaking, if you're in an area where most of the people are Gentiles, statistically speaking, that man was probably then what? A Gentile. Thank you. Come back to me. Don't think about your shopping list or the barbecue later. Come on back. We're pure logic, right? If statistically speaking, most people are Gentiles, then probably this guy was a Gentile, right? So we get to another Gentile. We got the Syrophoenician woman who was what? Jewish or Gentile? Gentile. Now we get to this guy, right? And again, was he Jewish or Gentile? Probably. Gentile. So here we are, another Gentile. But the difference is that the Mark's gospel doesn't say, well, Jesus starts debating with this guy if he should be healed or not. No, instead Jesus acts. Jesus heals him. It's a little bit different, right? It's almost as if the interaction with that unnamed woman a little bit earlier, maybe kind of she helped Jesus lean into and more fully embody God's truth that there is no partiality. You see, for in the rest of Mark's gospel, we'll find that Jesus' ministry is about action. It's about doing. It's about rejecting violence. It's about rejecting pride. It's about serving one another. It's about showing love to the outsider. It's about being with people instead of observing people. Is that making sense? Being with people instead of observing people. Does that make sense? I know you can talk through your mask. Does it make sense? Okay, great, great, great. Got to get you all woken up on this weekend, this holiday weekend. So, it's about being with people instead of observing people. You see, we have a God that acts with people and then invites you and me as people who follow the Christ, that is Jesus, those who follow the Christ, we are invited to be active in our faith. Now here's the deal. Our first reading from James. I don't like James' gospel. In fact, Martin Luther, the namesake of our tradition, didn't like James either. He kind of thought that James should be just shoved to the side. Nevertheless, we got James's reading today, and James kind of is going at the same idea of being with people instead of observing people in a little bit of a harsher manner. So let's look at it again, and you can pull out your bulletin if you want. For those of you on the screen, here it is, because James said on verse 15, and Kathy did a great job reading this. James said, "If a sibling is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm and eat your fill,' and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is that good? What is the good of that? So faith by itself, and if it has no works, it is dead." It's pretty intense, right? This is why Luther didn't really like James very much. It seems like you got to do works to actually have faith. But let's just pull this back a little bit. James is kind of saying here that God's vision is for an active faith. It's a faith that follows in the footsteps of an active God who liberated the Israelites. You remember that? The whole parting the Red Sea. Who saved Noah and the animals from the flood. You remember that? Big old boat floating up and down. And also who shows no partiality. You see, James is basically saying that your thoughts and your prayers are not enough. You see, rather, God's vision for the world is filled with thoughts and prayers and active love. It all goes together. So let's think about that in like the here and now, right? Let's think about that in today's context. So James is saying, only exclusively thinking about Afghanistan refugees is not the way that God reigns. Rather, it is through our work with organizations like Refugee One, where we respond to their needs and their resources, and we think about them, and we pray for them, then that is in alignment with our act of God. Is that kind of making sense, the difference there? Okay, so another example, hurricane. We've all heard of Hurricane Ida, right? Right through Louisiana, and then all the way up New York City, right? Hopefully, yeah, okay, good. We got a few heads shaking. So let's think about this. Hurricane Ida, all right, we're praying for them. We hope they recover. Let's hope the subway comes back up. Let's hope these people's houses are rebuilt and they have access to water. James would say that is not enough, right? Because our God is active. So it is thoughts and prayers and actions like maybe helping to give our financial resources to organizations like Lutheran Disaster Response, LDR, who is on the ground right now providing food and water and access to resources to help rebuild. You see, all of this, the takeaway from the reading of James is that our God acts. And only offering our thoughts and our prayers is not what our God imagines and visions and suggests if we are to live into God's kingdom or vision for the world or what God is calling us to bring about here and now. You see, God invites us. God invites us to join in God's work to bring about a world where the outsiders, those who seem different than us, they become our kin. They become our siblings. Where the hierarchies of them and us, well, they're broken down. Our God imagines a world where we recognize that we are all deeply interconnected. And so it's fitting that today's readings land on the day when we begin with ecumenical partners across the globe to enter into the season of creation. Now, if you haven't been with us before when we've gone through the season of creation, it's basically a time where we're acknowledging our interconnection with all of creation. It's a time when we own that we are a part of a diverse ecosystem that are God's gifts and are delicately balanced. And probably this year, more than other years, it's a time where we also lament the ways that how we as humans have prioritized our own ego, our own desires, our own wants, have detrimentally impacted the world and those who are maybe not as well off as us. Because to be honest, here near the Great Lakes, we've got it pretty good. They're saying that this whole climate change thing, we're going to do okay. The rest of the world is not necessarily in that same boat. And so that's where today's acknowledgments, they kind of go hand in glove with that Syrophoenician woman. That Syrophoenician woman who reminded us that the hierarchical systems of the world are not God's systems. They're not. For humans are not superior to other animals or to plants or to fungi or bacteria or algae. Rather, we are all interconnected. The season of creation invites us to pause for the next 5 weeks and to explore that interconnection and to realize the ways that we have let our ego pretend that humans are superior, and to justify our taking and our consumption without regard. So during this season, if you've been in this space before, you'll notice that we have a massive tent, and it's a bit larger than I had thought that it would be. But nevertheless, this large tent is kind of the image that the season of creation is pulling on for the next 5 weeks. You see, the tent is a reminder that God has pitched a tent among us in Jesus. God comes among us. Human flesh matters. And so, too, it is a symbol of our call to practice care for creation as an act of radical hospitality, as an act of safeguarding a place for all creatures, and as an act of acknowledging our common home. It's a reminder that God has given us enough for our need, but not enough for our greed. So maybe that massive tent is actually a good thing, right? It is enough. We can fit a lot. We can sustain a lot in this world. And that's where the season of creation and James and the Syrophoenician woman, they have reminded us that we have a God who does not only ponder and hope and wish and pray that we'll succeed, that we will flourish, that we will have abundant life, but we have a God who acts. Our God acts to include and to welcome all into that tent. Our God acts to bring about abundant life for all of humanity and for all of creation. We have a God who invites us then to partner with our God who already acts for us, among us, with us, through us, and then calls us to do the same so that we might find ways to gently care for the earth. Like here in Chicago, when it's raining and downpouring, so that we don't have to pump all of that water into the Chicago River, into Lake Michigan. Maybe it's just holding off on the dishwasher or doing a little bit of laundry. Wait until a dry day so they can process all of that water that's going into the storm sewers. Maybe it's just limiting our travel just a little bit. Instead of flying across the globe for vacation, maybe we do it a little bit closer to home. Maybe it's just slowing our consumption, eating what we have in our fridge, in our pantry, so that others might have access to food to eat. To simply live. To live simply so that others might simply live. All right, so I've talked long enough. You're done. You're ready to move on. So I'm going to wrap it up. Friends, our God took on human form. Our God has pitched a tent among us. And our God has given us an example of how large and vast and welcoming that tent is. And so we are invited to live in ways that follow in Christ's footsteps. To welcome all people, to break down those barriers and borders and hierarchies, and ultimately to acknowledge that abundant life is found in the diversity of life that our God has created. Amen.